Hello, lacrosse friends. Welcome once again to Box the Beat on NLL Radio. I'm pleased to also have the show available on iTunes through Inside Lacrosse, so you can check it out on SoundCloud. Go there by the NLL.com homepage. Go to News under NLL Radio, or go to iTunes and look up Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, and we're on there. So, a pleasure to be bringing you, lacrosse friends, the show once again this week. I'm Stephen Stamp, host of the show and an editor at IL Indoor. And this is the color commentators episode of Box the Beat on NLL Radio. A lot of fun talking to Mitch Belisle, recently retired defender for the Georgia Swarm, Champions Cup champion last year with the club. And John Arlotta, the owner of the team, pulled him back in, asked him if he would come and be the color commentator for the home games. He is doing a tremendous job right off the hop. Excellent work by Mitch Belisle. And then I'm joined by Brad Schalliner, who does the same job for the Vancouver Stealth. He's been doing color commentary for a long time. Talking about him and his work with Jumbo Elliott out in Vancouver and the challenges facing the Vancouver Stealth. Lots of challenges also facing the Georgia Swarm right now. Vancouver 0-4, Georgia 1-3, so neither team off to a great start. Both certainly hoping to get things rolling in the right direction. Great conversations about all of that and more with Mitch Belisle and Brad Schalliner this week on Box the Beat on NLL Radio. Joining me on Box the Beat, former member of the Georgia Swarm, defending National Lacrosse League champion, and now retired defender Mitch Belisle. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Stephen. Glad to be taking part.
So you were out and they sucked you back in. You're back doing color for the Swarm.
That is what happened. I was happy to ride off into the sunset as a champion, and they asked me if I was interested and willing, and at first I was glad, better not, and then talking with my wife, and they asked me again, and I couldn't say no twice. So, like Will Ferrell said in the Austin Powers movie, I can never be asked the same question three times.
Twice, maybe, but the third time,
twice.
Just can't go there. So it means a little travel for you because you're working for Trilogy Lacrosse. You're working in New Jersey. You're living in New Jersey, or are you off in the big city? Or
I'm in the big city. Yep. So my wife and I and our 1-year-old son live right downtown in the financial district, right next to Wall Street. And she works in Midtown, and I take the train one stop into New Jersey, and it's a good short commute here, and then hop on the flight down to Georgia every weekend for home games.
How's the trip? It seems like it'd be shorter than for some of the guys who have to go there.
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, it's really, New York is a hub, Atlanta's a hub, so I've grown to love the New York to Atlanta Delta trip, and it's actually become something of pretty routine now.
Nice. I really enjoyed listening to you call the first game you did, and then you called another one in the second home game, and reading the article you wrote on it's the Trilogy Lacrosse blog, I guess, right?
Yep, yeah, we wrote that. I wrote that, and we put it up on our Trilogy website, and it was fun. It was fun to kind of think about that experience. It's something new for me. I had a little bit of experience doing this at Trilogy events. Actually, we broadcast our Academic Aces as like a high school showcase. And so I've done color commentary. LSN has broadcast that in the past, and I've done the color for that. But this was the first opportunity to really do color commentary at a high level, and to do it with players that I know and a league that I know, and a sport that's unique for a lot of Americans. So it was fun to settle in some of my insight, but also it was fun to then break down what I learned and what was new and where my head was spinning and where I felt really comfortable.
I'd like to go over it a bit. I mean, I've done tons of color commentary and play-by-play for games, and it is a little funny. I remember the first game I ever did color commentary. I was thinking about going back to school. I'd been running a rowing club. I was going to go back to school for broadcast journalism, and I got a call from a friend who said that I was living in Peterborough. I was back in Peterborough after having been out west for a long time in Victoria and North Vancouver. And he said, "Hey, you're thinking about going to Loyalist for a broadcast, right?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Do you want to do color for the Lakers game tonight on Cogeco?" And I was like, sure. So the regular color play-by-play guy was away. So my friend Tim Dallaty, his uncle Pete Guerin, who played in the league, was doing play-by-play, and I was doing color. And there are a lot of challenges. My challenges included that my headset didn't work, so I had to basically turn and look to see when Pete was talking, so I knew when I was supposed to talk. And nobody told me there were little monitors up above us for replays until the second period. So you found out a few challenges as well.
Yeah, and you know, it's little things here and there, and you adjust to it on the fly. But there's also the learning curve of, hey, this is an industry that some people are really, really talented at and have best practices, and that's where I've been really lucky in being surrounded by guys like Mark Dino, who's done the color and who's been in radio for years, did color play-by-play back in his college days at Loyola. So he really knows the ins and outs and has been really helpful in giving me tips and trying to give me cues on when to speed up, when to slow down, and when to talk, when not to talk. And then I also work business partner at Trilogy's Ryan Boyle, who's done a lot of ESPN color commentary for NCAA lacrosse. So it's been really great. I've had some great people to lean on, and they've been very, very helpful in terms of like, hey, here's a couple of tips, here's what works, and here's what you need to look out for. So all that stuff has made it a lot easier, even with some of the challenges, I think, that are inherent with any live type entertainment.
Yeah. So you're figuring out like a system of hand signals and things. You've got to have the play-by-play and color hand signals so you know if you can stop, you need to stop someone, or somebody wants to, if you want to say something, or you always have to be able to communicate without talking.
Exactly. And again, Mark is a professional and is experienced, and he has those, and he's a really good communicator, obviously. That's why he's on the radio. Yeah. But he's a good communicator both when he's talking and also with his hands, and keeps me on pace. So that's certainly the behind-the-scenes things that people don't see, but really going to make sound good or sound poor.
Nice. I do need you to do me a favor and talk to him about the give and go, because it has been driving me and some other people nuts for a couple of years. That he does seem to think when somebody passes someone and they shoot, that's a give and go. Can you do that for us?
I can work on putting my take on what I feel is a give and go, and I would think that mine and yours are probably similar.
I've grown up, playing basketball, playing lacrosse, playing all kinds of things, hockey, everything. The give and go is always you give the ball or the puck, they give the ball to somebody, and then you make a cut, they give it back to you. You give, you make a goal, and you get it back. And or, as I remember a guy I played basketball with used to say, the give and go with him was, you give him the ball and you go get lost, he's going to shoot.
Guys that like that given
But you know, it was a lot of fun to hear you calling the game. It's really nice to hear, you know, hear people who have a great understanding and can bring a lot. And I thought your first game, it was interesting, because it did remind me some of my first game. Of I thought you were doing a really good job. I thought you were doing a good job early on, and you could hear you getting more comfortable as the game went along.
Yeah, and you certainly, the timing, the flow, those elements of things, you know, I feel like I'm always going to have some insight to provide on what's going on the floor, just because sometimes it's actually the harder part is not saying as much, because there's so many ways you can break down the offense, break down the defense, talk about what they're trying to do, but at a point, the ball is going to go to the other end, and you want the play-by-play guy to be able to announce what's happening, so people who either aren't watching or just listening can know what's going on. So that for me is the bigger challenge. It's really keeping everything very short, but saying something meaningful in a short amount of time.
Yeah, you mentioned that I always talk because I've done a lot of play-by-play now. When I have a new color guy, I point out, look, I'm going to be carrying the play. It's going to come down. There's a shot. There's a loose ball or something. When the ball is turned over, and the defense gets it, if they transition, if they push transition, I'll keep going. If not, you've got an 8 to 10 second window until they are set up in the offensive zone and starting to attack. And it takes a while to understand how to get your point across in 8 to 10 seconds. I liked what you said about, you know, football, there's a play, they stop, you can talk about it. But here, there's something else happening while you're trying to fit your stuff in.
Exactly. And, you know, there's points that I want to make that I have to either hold on to until it happens again or just throw out the window because there just isn't the time. But I think, again, that'll be something that comes down and get more comfortable with. You know, in the second game, it was tricky because neither offense, at least in the first half, neither offense was connecting on their passes. It was just a lot sloppier of a game.
Yeah.
And so it made it much harder to talk. So that was a unique situation because it was just more challenging. And then the rush offense got going, and so that gave me a little bit of material. But then the swarm still struggled offensively, and so it's certainly more difficult to speak about what's going on when it's not as clean or as smooth, or there aren't big runs or momentum kind of on the side of either team.
I like the one call on the Robert Church goal where he gave the ball off to – or Curtis Knight had the ball off on the righty side, threw it in the middle to – I think it was Shane Jackson. And Church, meanwhile, was sliding down. And you pointed out, hey, he's actually open earlier. He's more open earlier than when he actually got the pass. The pass was unbelievable how it was threaded through. But it did manage to connect. And then he just basically was spinning and shot. And that's the kind of thing. Like, did you feel when you got that one, you're like, yeah, I nailed that one?
Just, you know, I think that comes with the experience. As soon as I saw him flash open early, I was like, oh, man, wide open. And then they didn't pass it to him. I was like, that was a missed opportunity. And then 2 seconds later, they scored. So that was, you know, that's one of those things. I think just the experience of playing, you could see the missed matchup immediately. And you're like, that's an issue. So I can talk about that defensively. Or what happens is they scored, and I can talk about it offensively, that they had that opportunity. So I think that's one area I feel confident that my experience playing, especially on the defensive side, because I might not know how to run the offense, but I sure know what they're trying to do against us defensively. And so having that knowledge, I think, to talk through, like, here's how he got open, here's how he got open. And you know, they didn't hit him on the first pass, it still allowed the ball to move quickly and the defense not to adjust and then him to remain open.
It was interesting, I thought, on that play, that because there are so many things that you could talk about. I wrote about it a bit in my musings column where on that play, Church wasn't really open. I wouldn't have said he was open when the ball was thrown to him because Jason Noble.
No, he was not open.
Jason Noble was crashing down on him. I don't know how that ball, like I said, I've watched it 20, 30 times, and I still don't really know how they got that ball through to him and how he caught it and spun and got the shot in the perfect spot as it was all happening.
Yeah, the offensive players in the NLL are mind-boggling, and that's where I think the more people get to see what offensive players do, a goal like that, you know, I think every highlight that I've seen is dive goals and dunk goals, and those are great. I think those are exciting, but people need to see the goals like that goal. They need to see goals where it's a really nice pick and roll to a behind-the-back pass. And that behind the back pass is caught and then buried in tight under pressure. Like those goals just showcase how skilled the offense is, and that's what I think makes the league so amazing. I mean, that's why I never even got a sniff of the offense then, because I can't do anything close to that. And I've been playing professional lacrosse for 11 years.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because it's a great point that, you know, it's the dive goals and the dunk goals. The dive goals are great. The dunk goals are exciting, but, and there are some, like the Zach Currier goal earlier, you know, a few weeks ago when he took off, picked it up off the faceoff, just ran by everybody, dove, you know, jumped from one side of the crease to the far side and tucked it. It was pretty spectacular, but a lot of the dunk goals from straight behind the net are some of the easier goals. If you just get it at just the right time, a lot of the offensive guys will tell you that's actually a pretty easy goal, and it's a hard one to defend depending on positioning. So something like the Church goal is where a lot of things are coming into play.
It is and it isn't. I mean, I think it's very similar to a three-point line in basketball. Yeah. Like, yeah, you can let someone stand out there all day, but if they can shoot it, they're going to shoot it. So you can let someone stand behind the net, but now, as teams do it more and more, it's going to force defenses to cover a little bit more behind the net, which will spread things out up top, which will give some more opportunity. So I actually, you know, I feel like I saw some tweet that they thought that they didn't like the dunk hole, or they thought they were not athletic. And I think all it does is it just makes teams have to affect a little bit more and change your strategy. And I think it'll actually open up more up top when teams start adjusting to defend the dunk hole better, which will make the game more exciting. So I actually think it is going to create some different looks that people aren't anticipating because the defenses are going to start playing more aggressively guys behind the net.
Yeah, I mean, I guess a couple of factors there. One, it makes you just cover a larger area than if you just had to focus in front of the net. And the other big one is when the guy's back there, if he has the ball or somebody's got to be looking, if you're as a defender, if you're looking behind the net, it's awfully hard to be able to see the guys who are out in front of the net behind you and you know, stay on top of where they are and where they're moving and not lose track of that guy. I mean, it's just the more you can turn the defenders, the better, right?
Yep, exactly.
So how the whole experience of that first night with Rochester being delayed, it was a lot of hurry up and wait for you guys, right? Well, you're wondering what was going to happen and you know, kind of hanging around trying to get things done and knowing when and where you can do them.
Yep, yeah, we were just in there waiting and enjoying what we could of preparing and hearing the updates. You know, I got to spend some time in the locker room and talk to Joe Rutherford and Dan Dawson, so that was good to catch up with those guys that I really like and respect and enjoy watching. So hearing from them both personally and thoughts wise was fun. Two Chains was awesome, and then he went and played catch on the turf for a while, and he hung out in the locker room. It seemed like, you know, for being pretty big celebrity and Grammy winning rapper, he took it all in stride. So it was cool. I thought they did a good job of keeping us updated on what was going on, and ultimately, you know, the show went on. So it was certainly late, but I'm glad that happened the very first game, so I can see, okay, this is close to worst case scenario. Yeah. It's only going to go up from here.
Yeah. How many more games are you planning to do this year? You said something about five or so at first, but can we expect maybe a few more?
Yes. So it ended up working out that I'm going to be able to do 7 of the 9. So nice. I'll be doing all but 2 Swarm home games.
Nice. That's exciting.
Yeah, I'm glad that it worked out as it did.
And then, obviously, you're hoping, you're going to stay fairly impartial as an announcer, but as a longtime member of the Swarm, you're obviously hoping that things work out and you get to do some home games in the playoffs.
Yeah, and we'll see with the schedule. So I'm planning on playing one more season of MLL, and so that will certainly be a challenge. But like you said, first and foremost, I'm a Swarm supporter and fan, and then I put on my impartial hat when I get in the booth. But I want to see the Swarm do well. I want them to get back to the playoffs and ideally win another championship.
Right now, they're actually sitting in last place in the East. 1-3, and the one win was against a Rochester team that had all kinds of travel issues, and I thought fairly clearly faded in the second half after all of that. But to me, and you know, they're coming up against another 1-3 team in Calgary. To me, it seems very different. I think the Swarm are not far off, and maybe the surprise is it hasn't been the defense that's been an issue with so many changes on the defense. I think I and a lot of people thought it would take a while for the D to come together. They're giving up one more goal per game than last year. It's the O that hasn't really been clicking, that is just close but not quite there.
Yeah, and I think it's a little far from close right now. But that being said, all the tools are there, and it's going to happen. So I think they still got I'm trying to put my finger on exactly what's going on, but I think you're right. It's going to happen. The clicking is going to happen. I think having these road games that are against teams that are struggling right now may be just what they need. Yeah. But I also really trust our offense and trust all the guys that have played for so long together, and they're pretty unflappable. Guys like Shane Jackson and Randy Stutz, you know, they don't get down on themselves. So I'm pretty confident once the ball starts rolling downhill, it's going to pick up steam quickly, and they'll be right back to their 18, 20 goals a game, you know, by midseason. And with a defense, if the defense is where they did against Saskatchewan, they're going to be championship contenders again when the offense gets clicking.
Yeah. It's an interesting challenge for Dan Ladouceur, who, I mean, obviously did a great job last year coaching the offense, but, you know, he's a career defensive guy. He's been a D coach before, and I know in, like, Canadian Lacrosse League and things. And then he comes in, joins the staff. I know they were thrilled. John Arlotta and Eddie Comer were thrilled to have him as part of the group, and he was coaching the offense. And he said, he's told me several times, hey, I pretty much just roll the balls out and let those guys do their thing. But he will admit, and certainly the players will point out, there's more to it than that that he brings to it. But as a D guy, this is kind of the first time the offense is struggling, is having to make some more adjustments and things. And it'll be interesting to see how, knowing him, I believe he's going to do a great job. But it's going to be interesting to see how he works around that, how the challenge is for him.
Yeah, I think a lot of this may be a flow and a mental thing and a chemistry, which is very, very hard to define, as opposed to big strategic changes. Again, if you watch the rush game, they just weren't connecting on passes that they normally make. They were throwing the ball away. They were getting passes knocked down because they weren't part of the beat. I don't think there's, like, major strategy that he needs to revamp. It's more of, like, getting everyone on the same page, working at the same pace, and competing on those little plays. So that's where I'm, again, I don't think it's his role to be a master manipulator of what's going on X's and O's wise. And I think he's got the personality. Guys want to play hard. So if he can get those guys at the same pace, same level, I feel really confident they're going to be right back on track pretty quickly.
Being at the rink and seeing the games live, and I'm sure you're watching the road games on NLL TV, is it hard being away from playing? Does it give you the itch to get back, or are you pretty content with your situation? And is it harder being there at the rink than it is watching it online?
A good question. I certainly feel like I still could play and get, you know, I'm excited during the anthems, and I definitely have a little bit of a twinge, but also going to bed on after the game and waking up in the morning on Sunday after the games and not being completely beat up and not having a partially torn hamstring or pulled hip muscles, that makes it worth it. So I would say at this point I'm pretty happy with the decision I made, and I wouldn't change anything given a second chance.
Yeah. Sounds like you've gone out on your own terms, and as a champion, it's hard to ask for much more than that. And of course, you mentioned you've got your family, you've got career stuff going on, and you've still got the MLL for now.
Yeah, and that's where I felt like if I had the opportunity to go out on my terms, at least one league, I got that check mark done. So now we'll see if I can finish with a strong MLL season and feel really good about the way I left the game, at least playing-wise.
How do you feel about the situation in the National Lacrosse League for American players? You're from Maryland, you're living in New York and working in New Jersey, you went to Cornell, so a lot of American connections. You've been a national team guy for the U.S. and there are some great opportunities. I mean, Tom Schreiber coming in, a lot of people, to me it almost distracts people because people say, oh look, Tom Schreiber did it and he can do it. And I always say, hey, there are not many Tom Schreibers, there's one. And it's not that easy for other guys to get there without having the background. But it seems like with this Colorado Box League and, you know, the affiliate leagues of that popping up around and what U.S. Box League is doing, it just seems like there's a lot of opportunities developing for American guys.
Absolutely. And it's, I think you said two of the words that I think are key to this. It's experience and it's opportunity. And I was really lucky that I had Adam Mueller, who took a chance and gave me the opportunity to go out and play and learn the game, having never played it before. But there are now, there's so much more with US Boxla and some of the organizations. My country, Soldiers Lacrosse, we're running our first box program this winter. We had practice last night. We have our first tournament this weekend down in Pennsylvania. So there's more opportunity for all these kids now to get experience. It's going to end with expansion of league. It's going to be a matter of time before there are more Americans playing. I mean, it's like anything else. If there's, you know, if your talent pool widens, you're going to have more players from different areas. So as talent pool continues to widen and the game of box is offered to kids as they grow up, they're going to have those experiences. And NFL is doing a great job of growing it. So I see the American influence to certainly be on the horizon in the future, but it's still a long ways off. I mean, yeah, we're still in the infancy stages, and there is nowhere to, unless you go up to Canada, there's nowhere to go if you're a college kid and you want to learn box, other than if you do the Colorado League. Although it sounds like there's another one starting, I think maybe in Baltimore. But
And there's one in Ohio, I think, as well, right?
That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah,
and
it was those guys
who
are running that. So
it's cool. It's interesting that it seems like, I was going to say, it seems like every time you turn around, there's another opportunity becoming available. And then you say, oh, and, you know, Trilogy Lacrosse, we just started our first box league. We've got our tournament coming up. So there's another one that I wasn't familiar with yet. So it's great to hear, because it's such an important thing for the league, for the game, I think, to give opportunities to the American players that have really been going away as there have been fewer teams. So adding teams helps and giving them those opportunities. But I do hear people saying, oh, you know, in a couple of years. I said, no, this is like a 10-year program to get, you know, guys coming from there. There'll be a few guys, but there's not going to be a really large body of them for, you know, 5 to 10 years. And then I think we're going to, as the league grows, I think it could really be terrific.
I agree. It's kids that are middle schoolers picking up box now that are the ones that are going to be playing in the NLL. So you've got 10 years here where there's going to be more NLL teams, which gives more opportunities. The kids are going to continue playing. There'll be opportunity to play through college in leagues like the Ohio League and Colorado League and others that I'm sure will develop. So in the U.S. Lacrosse backing, box lacrosse is certainly going to, you know, they're going to have a developmental program. So it's definitely a groundswell is building, but it's going to be some time, absolutely.
Really appreciate you taking the time to come on Box the Beat and talk about your experience going, you know, switching from player to color commentator and the Georgia Swarm and Americans in the game. It's a lot of fun to talk about all these different aspects, and appreciate you making the time.
Of course, Stephen. Thanks for having me on, and appreciate everything you do for the game.
Joining me now on Box the Beat on the Color Commentators edition of the show is Brad Schallener of the Vancouver Stealth broadcast team. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Stamper. How's the life in the land of the rising waters today?
Things are good in the borough. Things are nice. The melt is on. It's about 5 or 6 or 7 degrees today, so it's pretty cool. But yeah, there's a lot of standing water where the snow and ice was.
Yeah, we talked to Jimmy Badley a lot, and there's never anything bad to say about Peterborough. No matter how cold the weather is, it's always, you know, it's a nice cold today. It's it's a manageable -10 today. It's always it's God's country, right?
-10 is manageable, but last week it was -27 to -30, and I mean, I love the borough. I grew up here, moved out west for quite a while, came back here, and I do love it, but that was not pleasant. I'm not going to lie.
No, thank you.
No, I could have done without the -29 when you're, you know, that, there's that Facebook meme. Somebody put a little cartoon and it said, the air makes my face hurt. Why am I living where the air makes my face hurt?
And I just live where it rains 6 months out of the year. We're constantly underwater, so yeah. I could ask the same question. I need a snorkel to live in Vancouver.
Yeah, I lived in Victoria for quite a while, and it rained, but then I lived in North Vancouver, and North Van rains about the most of all of Vancouver, except some parts of West Van. But then I ran a rowing club in Deep Cove, which is the rainiest part of North Vancouver.
I think there's a perma cloud that just kind of hovers over Deep Cove and just pours at all times. Did you ever come out to Ladner when you were living here? Because it never rains at Ladner. Ladner and Tawasin are known to be always sunny.
I'm not sure if I'd go that far. I've been at the ferry terminal, and there was plenty of rain.
But that day.
I have been out there, but you know what? When Deep Cove is sunny and a nice spring or summer or fall day, there's nothing better.
No, it's pretty special spot. Great place to go swimming in the summertime, too.
Yeah. Speaking of swimming, we should talk about lacrosse.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. So, first of all, I want to talk a bit about, because I had Mitch Belisle on the show as well, and I mean, he's brand new to the whole color commentary thing. Well, he actually did some local stuff, but his first chance a few weeks ago to get into the NLL game, and I thought he did a really nice job calling the games, and he's only getting better. You've been doing it for a while, and you're working with Jake Elliott, who's one of the top play-by-play guys, and you're settling in nicely, the two of you.
Yeah, well, we've been working together for a long time. It's been a while in the pros as well, but, Jumbo and I go back to the summer of 2007, and I was doing color for the Coquitlam Junior Adamax at the time. They were doing their first year of webcasting before I moved over to play-by-play, and Jumbo was doing play-by-play for the WLA at that time, and he never had a color guy. And he heard me doing these Junior Adnax games, and he gave me a call out of the blue one day. I'd never heard of him. I knew that he'd be a former coach in Coquitlam and that. And he said, hey, I like what I'm sounding on these Junior Adnax games. Why don't you come join me for the WLA season, and then we can do the Man Cup together in 2007, which was out here. And so that's when we started working together. We've been together every summer since. And, when we got to the pro ranks, Jake went to Minnesota, got a great opportunity there for a couple of seasons, and I got a job with the Washington Stealth at the time and did 2 years of play-by-play there. Yeah. And so we kind of went our separate ways for a while. And then when the Stealth moved back to Vancouver, Jumbo had the opportunity to come home. I slid over to the color booth where I felt a little bit more comfortable. And then Jake's obviously the play-by-play extraordinaire that he is. And now I can't believe we're 5 years in Vancouver already. His time has absolutely flown. But yeah, it helps to be really comfortable with your play-by-play guy and your color guy. Relationships go a long way, and Jake and I are really good friends off the floor. We text literally 24 hours a day, and I think we've got pretty good chemistry that we've built over the years. It didn't happen out of the gate that way. Anybody who's ever met Jumbo or listened to our radio show, I think the first couple of years I had to kind of figure out how to get my way in there, because if you're not aggressive with Jumbo, you're not going to get a word in edgewise. And it took me a long time to kind of figure out our dynamic, but I feel like we've settled in nicely now, and we're on a really good rhythm. And we did a game on TSN together a couple of seasons ago. Yeah. We've called some big lacrosse games together, so we feel pretty comfortable together.
Yeah, I mean, I think the rhythm is good. I know what you mean. I've done some things with Jumbo, and you can't be a shrinking violet and get to say anything.
No, I did color with him for 3 seasons without saying a word, I think, in the WLA from 2007 to 2010. But I think we figured it out now.
Yeah. I had I'm trying to remember who it was. I had somebody come and do color with me for the first time when I was doing a play-by-play game. And it was in Finland, the European Championships. And he was a good guy, but we get through the first quarter and we take the break for a couple minutes. And he says, how was that? And I said, that wasn't bad, but I actually brought you here to talk, not to sit there and watch me call the game. Yeah, go ahead.
Provide some insight. I had the first 2 years that I was in Washington, I was doing play-by-play, and Kevin Alexander was my color guy. Yeah. And he's one of the greatest lacrosse players in the history of the game. He's got a great mind for the game. Just an absolute legend. And, it was a challenge the first little bit working with him, because I wanted to bring that knowledge out on the broadcast, and he was a member of the coaching staff, still is, and so it was a bit tough at times for him to say anything negative against the Stealth or go the other way and talk about the opponent in an impartial way. But you just got to learn the personality of the guy that you're working with and learn how to set him up. And you only sound good when you both sound good. So it was about asking the right questions and trying to bring that personality out of people.
The big thing you know, in the last couple of years with you and Jumbo is you're down between the benches. The NHL started doing some of that. They were the first I saw with the TSN called it the one up, one down, where they'd have, you know, the play-by-play is up in the broadcast booth and then the color is down between the benches. And we've seen lots of between the benches analysts and things, but to have the color down there is a different challenge. I was talking to Mitch Belisle about how, you know, you as a play-by-play and color, and you guys would have done this, you figure out hand signals, you write notes, whatever you have to do to communicate the stuff you can't say on air, but it's tricky when you are down between the benches, you're not physically in close proximity.
Yeah, the benefit, the Langley Event Center, the cozy confines of the Langley Event Center, like I get a pretty good clear or a pretty good view of the broadcast booth. Like, I don't know how we would do it in Calgary. I think it would be damn near impossible. And I think that's probably why they don't do it there. And that's why they bring in a third sometimes in Calgary with Andrew McBride and whatnot and Kayla Spees back in the day. But yeah, the LEC, if you watch a stealth game, and you watch the player will score a goal, and the camera always follows the player to the bench, and I'm always looking up. And I'm looking up at the replay, but I'm also looking up at Jumbo because, I'm pointing at myself saying, okay, this is where I'm going to jump in now, or I'm giving them the rap signal, or, I'm frantically waving my hands, like, okay, I got a point. I need to get in here to get this off, or the timing is going to be off, and this point's not going to make any sense in a minute here. And, you know, he's doing the same thing because there's times downstairs where I wanna take my headset off and I wanna listen into what Todd LeBronge is explaining to Jamie Badley. Yeah. Or if it's a case of last week, I wanna pull the headset off and hear what Jim Milligan and Blaine Manning are screaming at each other, or what players are saying on the way to the bench. And Jumbo has to keep an eye on that because when I take the headset off, I can't hear anything he's saying.
Right.
And so he has to know and keep an eye on me. Okay, now Brad's settled again, headset's back on, microphone's in hand. What did you just see down there? What just happened between these two guys? So then I can chime in.
Yeah, I've done that where I've been between the benches, or I've had people between the benches for Canadian Lacrosse League games, and we didn't have a talkback system, same thing. We didn't. You had to make contact, and we would have actually we were up behind the benches sometimes, like in Barry. So you'd basically have a piece of paper that you'd wave when you wanted to talk. You know, you figure things out. But you brought up an interesting point. What did Jim Milligan and Blaine Manning have to say to each other?
What kind of radio show is this?
I don't know that I figured out the bleeping technology yet, so you may want to just tidy it up ahead of time.
Let's just say that, I like to keep, I hear a lot of good chirping down there. I have my favorite chirpers. I've got the favorite things that I've heard guys say to each other, but I feel like that's between two guys on the floor in the moment going back and forth. And, I'm privileged. I get to hear it and it's awesome. And I can allude to it on the broadcast, but you can't really repeat what coaches are going after each other saying, or what players are chirping each other with. But I can't tell you, in that situation, I think Toronto, the game was out of hand at that point. That was I think that was after the two fights, that was after the third quarter fight, the Merrill Smith fight. I can't remember.
I think it was after the, Hostrauser and Suter, and then McCready and Sorensen, right?
Yeah, and I think they were, it might have even been after Brad Cree and Hawksby fought. I think that's when it was.
Because I think you're right.
Matt Sawyer and the bench from Toronto were saying to the refs, they're going after his head every time. They're going after his head every time.
Yeah.
And I think the stealth argument was like, okay, we're already getting, it's already 20-1 here. Why are you guys even trying to challenge a fight? Ian Hawksby is a guy who's barely ever fought in the National Lacrosse League. Yeah. He's tough as nails, but he's not a fighter. And, he might have got a little bit of high up on Brad Cree, but a guy who's, a foot and a half taller than him, and a young guy goes after the oldest guy on the team and a guy who's never fought. So I think, Millie is a pretty fiery guy, and I think there might have a little bit of frustration there. It's 20-1. Why is a young stud going after one of our older grizzled vets?
Yeah. Understandable. I mean, I can see it from both perspectives. If you're Toronto, if you're Brad Cree and you've gotten hit in the head earlier, which led to the Brody Merrill fight with Cliff Smith getting the penalty, then you feel like you've gotten hit in the head again. It can be pretty frustrating. I can see how he'd go after it. I can see where Hawksby would be saying, dude, I didn't mean to do that. And
the guy who does the accidental head hit, or the coaching on that team, is, they're never going to see the high hit. It's the opposition who gets hit that's going to see it as egregious.
Yeah. That was a very, very strange game.
To say the least. I was saying to Jake, well, we much commented on during the broadcast. Like, I don't think I've ever been a part of an NLL game, and I've been doing this for seven seasons at the pro level, where there's been a score that lopsided, not out of hand, you know, even through one quarter that early. Yeah. I've never been a part of a game like that. And I don't really even remember watching one over the last few seasons. Certainly none of this Delta been involved in.
And then you get it's interesting. You see the big lead and nothing's working for Vancouver, and they're disheartened and they're frustrated, and it's hard to pick yourself back up. And for Toronto, it's a tough situation as well, because they don't want to rub it in, but at the same time, you don't just stop playing. I mean, that's disrespectful to your opponent as well. Like, so what do? You just keep going. And honestly, I mean, it was a bad night for Ty Belanger. It wasn't a particularly good night for Brody McDonald. They weren't getting a whole lot of help from the defense. And Toronto shots just seemed to be going in, even if they weren't. I mean, they hit some good spots, but it just seemed like everything was going in.
Yeah, the stealth couldn't buy a save in that one. And I do think that first half by Toronto, that offense was absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
And I don't think they could have scored 17 on many other teams in the league, because you think a goalie's going to get a stop or a better defense is going to shut some down. But, you know, that was beautiful offense. Everybody got in on it. Everyone got their touches. Every offensive player had multiple goals. And it was literally a work of art. And that's why I think the crowd stuck in it at the Langley Event Center, because there's a little bit of, okay, can Toronto hit the record tonight? But it was also like, it was a bad game on the scoreboard, but the entertainment value was there because Toronto was so precision. It was just brilliant to watch the way that they were flinging the ball around the offense. And I know as a broadcaster, I think some of the fans were like, okay, this is what one of the best offenses in the league can look like. This is worth the price of admission right now. Like, you know, the stealth defense was weak and the goaltending couldn't get a stop, but that offense was absolute money for Toronto.
Yeah. So Toronto had some early season struggles. They've won their last two games, including that big one over Vancouver, so they've got things turned around. The stealth need to turn things around. There are some challenges. I mean, they've got to have one of the goalies step up and start playing the way that they can. They've got to have the defense start playing cohesively, and they've got to have the offense, other than Logan Schuss, start just doing what they can do. Even Corey Small, who's got 15 points, just two goals. They need all these things to happen. But how do you turn that around when so many things are not working right now?
Well, I think we're going to see some lineup changes this weekend, definitely. Stealth have talked about it since day one. They don't have two goaltenders. They have three.
Yeah.
And I highly suspect Eric Penny to come off the practice roster this week, get that starting job against the team that drafted him, and maybe a couple bodies that he's familiar with. But they just need a different look, even if it's just for a different mindset for your defenders, just to have a different body back there and a different opportunity. I think Eric Penny will give them a really good chance to hang in that game a little bit longer than Ty Belanger or Brody McDonald would it right now. And that's no slight to those two guys, but you just have to find something different. And it has been working, and I think we're going to see EP, who's earned it. He had a fantastic summer, and don't forget, for a minute, he was a starter for the Vancouver Stealth a couple years ago before Ty Richards came out of retirement. Like, they had faith in Eric Penny 2 years ago, and, you know, they've got a couple guys in front of him with a lot more NLL minutes. That's why he started the season on a practice roster, but it's been up for grabs, and I think Eric Penny has a really good opportunity right now to come in and try to get a game for the Vancouver Stealth. And like I said, the confidence of the defense will be a lot higher with the different goaltender back there, and knowing what Eric Penny can do. They see him in warm-ups. They see him in practice. Eric Penny is a good goaltender.
Yeah.
And so that'll give the defense a bit of a confidence boost. And I don't know who can come off to, like, Thomas Hogarth is almost ready. We may see Thomas Hogarth in the lineup this weekend. You know, there could be some other changes. John Harnett's getting healthy. I don't think he's ready yet, but they're trying to get him back in as soon as possible. And, you know, the Stealth have been preaching after the first loss, stick to the system. After the second and third loss, stick to our systems. But after the fourth loss, you know, I think they need to switch up the system that they've been running with the four games and just get back to simple, basic lacrosse, because the system hasn't been working, and they need to go back to the drawing board a little bit, and they need a physical night out of their defense. You know, there's been a lot of stick swinging and a lot of matador defense, as Kevin Alexander calls it, and They're letting guys come through the middle unscathed and untouched. And, you know, Callum Crawford lives on the doorstep, and he'll eat you up all day there. So the Stealth need to get physical down low and try to keep those bodies at bay. And, yeah, the offense is just a real, real anomaly right now. You don't get a slump like that out of superstars in the National Lacrosse League ever. Like, is Mark Matthews or Lyle Thompson or Reese Dutch or Corey Small, any other point in their career, have the droughts like they're having? Like, it's absolutely unheard of. And I think Corey Small can shoot his way out of it. Like, he's still getting his chances. The balls just aren't falling for him right now. I don't know if he needs to switch it up a little bit. Maybe try a new stick. Maybe try a different couple of variations on the shot just to get goaltenders thinking a little bit. But Reese Dutch is the concern right now, and the drought on that righty side. Anthony Malcolm hasn't chipped in at the rate that they thought he would when they brought him in from Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Maybe he has a big night against his former team, and they kind of go head-to-head with Jordan Durston. But they got to find a way to get Reese Dutch off the schneid. And I think it all comes down to Reese Dutch and looking in the mirror and trying to figure out what stage he's at in his National Lacrosse League career right now. He's going to be 32 years old this year. If that outside shot is tapering off, you know, how can you adapt your game to feed Anthony Malcolm, pick and roll with Anthony Malcolm to get him open in the middle or get those looks across the floor? It's frightening. If you go back to the playoff game, Stamford, last year, Dutch was blanked in that one too. So it's actually one goal in five games.
And
a lot of these guys, they know what the issue is. And I think the big thing this week is players being at home and looking themselves in the mirror and saying, how can I improve? How can I be better this week in Buffalo?
I think you've nailed it in terms of the big concern is Reese Dutch. And honestly, watching the game against Calgary when, you know, he's shooting away and then he scored on the jump shot, and I thought, oh no. Because I am not a fan of the jump shot. I don't like it. The Corey Conway shot. Like, I think Corey can be a very good player, but I hate the jump shot. You know, there are other guys who do it. Callum Crawford will do it sometimes.
Yeah, Crawford.
And occasionally it works because you can change an angle. You can do this or that. But to me, you leave the floor, you lose your connection, you have no drive, and you lose your power and your ability to adjust effectively. And when he scored that, I thought, oh, he's going to think that's the answer. And it almost seems like he did. And, you know, I mean, he's tried some, and I just felt like saying, Reese, you're one of the best shooters in the game over the last decade. Just keep shooting the way you do. Like, don't – it's tempting to change, and sometimes you got to change some stuff up. But at the same time, he's scored, and you just go back, 38 goals, 48 goals, 41, 36, 45, 33, 42, 33, 35. That's every season of his career he's never scored.
No one was more consistent over that stretch.
Yeah, he's never scored less than 33 goals. There's no question he can do it. But again, you know, he's going to be 32. He has relied a lot on the outside shot. And at what point do you have to change it up? But I mean, it's not time definitely to throw in the towel on Reese Dutch.
No, and you know, he's got a lot of lacrosse left in him, and he's a fiery competitor, and you know, he knows that he needs to be better. And he mentioned to us in the preseason one of the things that he has admittedly lost a little bit in his game was his one-on-one abilities, and a lot of that was to do with his Achilles injury. But you know, when Reese Dutch was in his prime, and when Reese Dutch is at his best, not to say he's out of his prime now, when Reese Dutch is at his best, his footwork one-on-one is almost unmatched. Like, Curtis Dixon does it better than anybody, but there's times where Reese Dutch is one of the best one-on-one lacrosse players in the world, and we haven't seen that at all. And I mentioned in the broadcast against Toronto, when there's even opportunities to go one-on-one against defenders right now, he's opting for shooting around their body, shooting over their shoulder, rather than using the ankle-breaking skills that he once had to get around guys and take it to the rack and drive it right on top of the goaltender, fly through the air, and, you know, Dutchy dangle underneath somebody. I don't think Jumbo said the word Dutchy dangle all season. He hasn't gone underneath guys like he's done, and I think that one-on-one comes with confidence too, and you have to continually try that. You need to work on that in practice. You have to try it in games and get successful, because if you're not feeling confident one-on-one, you know, it's tough to come back from that. So I think the one-on-one game, if he figures out how to take a couple drives, maybe there's a defensive matchup that he likes this week, you can try to take a guy's couple one-on-one, snap some ankles and get on the doorstep, that's where he does a lot of his damage at his best.
Well, the thing too, I mean, you're talking about confidence, which is so important in sports, and it's always mystifying the guys who are so talented, who are so good at something, can have these crises of confidence. But it's not just in your skill, it's your health. And when you have an Achilles injury, I remember talking to Corey Small after he came back from his knee injury, and a lot of guys, and they say, you know, it takes a while before you can really trust it. And your Achilles, I mean, people, you always hear about the knees, and it's such a big thing, it's a long process. The Achilles is a big deal too, and it is so important. And if you don't know 100% that it's there for you, it's hard to instinctively go when there's the one-on-one chance. It's so easy to be like, I'll just step back and take the shot,
and it hurts like hell too, like, yeah. That is the confidence of trying to have it work. But when you plant on a sore Achilles and, you know, try to pivot around somebody or use your footwork, it's painful. I mean, it shoots a pain up your leg like you never believe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to try to overcome that, super tough. Yeah. Super tough. And we're seeing that right now.
You mentioned Jamie Batley earlier, and I mean, I've known Bats for years being here in Peterborough, and he has always been a fiery competitor. He was actually kind of scary to be around sometimes during during game days. I've got a really good relationship with him. We get along very well. I really like him. I really admire him as a coach. And I also think he has changed. I had him on the show last year and talked about that. And he said, you know, you get a little older, you get a little smarter, you realize you can't just be yelling at guys all the time. You can't just be hounding guys. And he's adjusted. It's kind of a kinder, gentler Jamie Batley, but I would think some of the old Bats is coming out with a 4-game losing streak to start the season.
Yeah, you know, you have to go back to that at some point. I think largely too, Jamie has adapted for the team that's in front of him. He knows what kind of love and what kind of tenderness the Vancouver Stealth, some of the players might need. And, you know, the Stealth have had assistant coaches and some coaches that have been streamers, and it hasn't worked. And Jamie Batley really understands his players. Jamie Batley himself was a hell of a lacrosse player and a champion everywhere. And he really knows, he's a player's coach, and he knows the mindset and, you know, what a game day routine should look like with these guys. And, you know, guys like Reese Dutch and Corey Small, they don't need someone to yell and scream at them. Maybe some of the younger guys might need that to light a fire, but again, if you don't have fire in the National Lacrosse League, you shouldn't be there anyway. Yeah. So I think a lot of the screaming, you know, I haven't really missed it down there, and I don't know if the bench totally has either, because I think you can scream all day, but, you know, when you're getting blown out 24-7, all the screaming in the world is not going to do anything about that. That's about talking to guys and making themselves look in the mirror and holding guys accountable.
I remember speaking of coaching, talking to a friend of mine, Marnie McBean, who is a three-time Olympic rowing champion. I used to be a rower, so we traveled in the same circles, trained in the same places. And she was talking about, she was in the women's pair and then a women's double in the 92 and 96 Olympics with Kathleen Heddle. They're very different characters. Marnie is very outspoken, very loud, very kind of brusque. And at times people find her abrasive. She's very direct. And Kathleen is super soft-spoken, very, very smart, very driven, a great athlete, but very quiet and very much within herself and a lot of what she's doing. And I remember Marnie saying, you know, that her, or actually it was Al Morrow, their coach, was talking. He said, you know, I went to them and I said, what kind of coach do you need me to be on race day and on practice day? And what do you guys need from me? Because what they needed was so different. I remember coaching my rowing club in North Vancouver and we were doing ergometer tests, like rowing machine tests for, you do a 2000 meter piece as fast as you can. And I asked them, okay, what kind of feedback do you want? And one girl was like, I don't like when you're yelling. I don't want you to yell at me or be really loud. I kind of like to focus in on my thing. And another girl was like, you can come over here and yell at me. You can stand beside me and be right in my ear and just scream the whole time. I love it. I was like, okay. And it's the same kind of thing, right? Like, you have a roster of 24 guys.
Different strokes for different folks. And, you know, and at the same time too, to go back to my days watching the way Chris Hall coached, and he was a yeller. He was a fiery guy. But, you know, the game, I learned a lot from Kevin Alexander about this theory too. We had him on the show a couple weeks ago. But, you know, they really see the game in a real simple kind of way. And, you know, you can't really get Kevin Alexander is never going to stand on a bench and scream at somebody because he's a naturally God-gifted, talented lacrosse player, but it's come easy to him, and he thinks that the superstars already know it. The game is not super complicated. They just need to go out there, let loose, have some fun, share the ball, distribute, try to be your best self, your best lacrosse player, and the guys know that. And, you know, maybe you have a coach. That's why their bench is Jim Milligan, Kevin Alexander, Jamie Batley, some of the greatest players and coaches of all time, because all sometimes Reese Dutch needs, he doesn't need a yeller. He needs someone to say, yeah, you know what, I know why this shot is going wide on you. Maybe try this next time. That's what Jim Milligan can do. He's kind of a stick guru. He can tell guys, okay, the ball's coming out with a bit of a hook. Let's tweak this. Try this next time. And Jamie Batley knows how to shoot guys out of a slump. He'll move a guy to the point on the power play so they get some better looks. That's what happened with Logan Schuss last year. He went, I think, two or three games without a goal, moved Logan to the point on the power play, got some different looks at the net, and then he had a nine-point night and kind of had a streak to end the rest of the year. It's just smart lacrosse minds who know how to make minor adjustments, because the players on the floor should already be pros and know how to fix their own game. They just need suggestions rather than have someone screaming at them.
We're going to wrap up by, I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you when you see the first win coming. When will the losing streak be snapped?
Oh, well, Buffalo's going to be a tough challenge, Stamper. That's a loud barn. That's a team that's playing really good lacrosse right now.
But then you've got Colorado and Georgia.
And you got Colorado in Colorado, Georgia at home the night after.
Yeah.
You know, I think Stealth play against the Mammoth pretty well. And the Western Division games are much more important to this franchise right now than the Eastern games. They're not taking anything lightly, but they know the must wins are against divisional opponents.
Yeah.
I think they can beat the Colorado Mammoth. I think this weekend's going to be tough, but I think they can beat Colorado in Colorado.
Wow.
Extra pissed off at the Loud House. I think that's a good matchup for them.
Wow, I like that bold decision. Bold strategy.
You know how all the expert opinions and all the expert picks are doing this year, right? So
hey,
do what you want with that.
We're actually doing okay at IL Indoor. I'm 7-0 the last 2 weeks.
Well, and Marissa's holding everybody up.
Shut up.
So that was a nice addition to the team.
I don't like that at all. No, you know what? It's great having Marissa along, but she came out hot, and then she's, you know, I've gone 7-0. I don't think I've gained an inch on her in the last 2 weeks. Like, oh, come on. And I chirped her at one point on Facebook. I was like, oh, just wait. I'm going to get you. How long do you think you can stay ahead of me? She's like, you're not going to catch me. I was like, oh, I will get you, young one.
That's why we love this league, right? Like, yeah. Literally any given night, we have no idea what is going to happen. And that keeps us glued to our seats and glued to NLL TV and glued to all things National Lacrosse League.
Yeah, especially because every once in a while you think you've just got it figured out. This is what's going to happen. And it gets blown up that weekend.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thanks so much for coming on. Appreciate the time. And it's always a pleasure to talk. We'll look forward to hearing more of your calls on NLL TV. And enjoy the liquid sunshine out west.
Thank you, Stamper. Enjoy this podcast every week. You do a fantastic job. And continue doing what you do and growing the game, my man. Best of luck the rest of the year.
All right, lacrosse friends, I'll just about wrap things up for this episode of Box LaBeat on NLL Radio. My thanks to you for being here. Thanks to Mitch Belisle, who is an up-and-coming color commentator after his retirement from the National Lacrosse League, and one of the veteran and really good color commentators in the league, Brad Schallener. Some great insights from both of these guys this week. Come back every week for more great guests on Box LaBeat on NLL Radio. And remember, you can find it on iTunes through Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. Two great sources to find the best of lacrosse podcasting. Box LaBeat on NLL Radio.